start.
Good evening. This is Rabbi Dr. David Fox from Project Chai and Chai Lifeline.
I found this on the web.
We're going to be talking this evening about the very tragic, entirely unexpected drowning of a youngster on a summer camp trip. This particular discussion is intended for parents who have children who will want to provide support and information, as well as notifying their own children about some of what has taken place. I'm going to preface with a personal reminiscence. Many, many years ago, as a Talmud, a student of Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zichrono Livracha, at the yeshiva summer camp, we had such a tragedy. It happened during the 9 days, and it involved a young man who fell out of a boat on the lake. And it was at that point that I remember Rabbi Feinstein introduced a takana, an enactment, which caught on in many, many different yeshivas and camps to no longer allow any types of water activities or sports during the 9 days. Now, the tragedy at hand is somewhat reminiscent of that, but the circumstances are very different. It didn't happen during the 9 days. We're not yet holding in Chodesh Av. It happened in the most rare and unusual way, because this is a supervised activity in a public water park, and it's virtually unprecedented. We don't have an explanation for it. We don't have all the details, nor should that be your focus with your children, trying to give an explanation. What we do know is that there were many busloads of campers who had to be detained when this was going on and as it was being investigated. And for those of you who have children who were in the buses waiting for a couple of hours, that in itself can be a frightening ordeal, although it's probably fair to say that it pales in reference to the much greater tragedy that happened to this poor youngster. If your children were not part of that particular camp's event, but will hear, as they inevitably shall, the rumors about what happened, they are just as likely to react to it as would children who were either on the buses or who actually may have witnessed what actually occurred at the water park. So what we have to be mindful of as adults, as parents, is that this was a tragedy for anyone who is present and witnessed the accident. It's extremely, extremely tumultuous and frightening and scary and sad and sickening. But even for those children who were not directly present, who learned about it, who heard about it, they still are just as likely to have some reaction, because while not having been present personally, each child identifies personally with what occurred, because our children are children, and our children are campers, and our children go to water parks, and our children do other outings as part of their summer routine. And as a result, the way that your child's heart and mind work will be a rushing of associations in being able to identify firsthand, personally, with what happened, and to be anxious and nervous about it. So your task as parents, as loving, caring parents, is to be supportive of your child, and I'm going to give you some practical recommendations on what we are advising parents and others who are calling on our crisis line or who are calling in to our group-specific phone conference who are seeking information. The first thing we're going to address is notifying your child. Be mindful that the most sheltered child, even those children who don't have access to digital media, but they are within range of the conversations that go on in the media, in cyberspace, and by word of mouth. And it is quite possible that your children know something already. Word travels very fast, and particularly bad news travels fast. And you may find that the children not only have heard something, but they know, may possibly know more information than you have at hand. So my recommendation would be that when you have a chance to speak to your child, make sure that they're calm, make sure that it's in a fairly relaxed atmosphere. If it's possible that both parents can be part of the discussion, then that might be ideal. If not, then one parent should have the discussion, but not in a place where there's distraction or noise or people walking in and out, but rather in a setting that's calm enough so that the child will be able to have whatever reaction and will be able to ask whatever questions without fear of being ridiculed or misperceived by other people. I would recommend that you gently probe with your child whether or not they have heard about what took place at the water park. If they have, what you want to recommend is that they share with you what they understand took place, and also that they share with you how they see themselves reacting internally, the different thoughts, the different emotions. The objective here in getting them to process their experience is not to stick just to facts, not to make it an intellectual event, but the objective here is to help them self-assess and be aware of any of the reactions that they're having. So again, if your children have heard the information, you do want them to relate to you what they've heard. If you know that some of the information that they have is faulty or is distorted, or if they're hearing or understanding this in a much more amplified or exaggerated way, hear them out nonetheless, and at a later point you might gently correct or clarify things. But we want you to do much less talking and much more warm, supportive listening. If the child absolutely has heard nothing about this, so I don't believe that very young children need to be clued into this type of tragedy if they haven't heard about it, but certainly children who are of that general age range, and let's say for right now that about 8 years of age, 7 or 8 years of age, would be a starting point where a parent might want to do disclosure. If children are much younger than that, play it by ear, based on what the child may have been exposed to or what they tell you they're reacting to. But if the child has absolutely not heard anything about it, you say you want to share some very troubling news. There was a very, very tragic event. let the child catch their breath. You speak in paced and measured terms, and you speak with compassion, and you speak with sensitivity. And I would recommend that you, without appearing cold and blunt, you say that there was an accident and a young camper lost his life. And you can refer to it as an accident, you can refer to it as a tragic accident, but make sure that you insert into your notification message that this was an accident. And you want to consider using words like, this was a very highly unusual, very rare, and completely unexpected event. The reason that you want to do that is that can curtail to a degree the fears and the anxieties getting a grip on the child and them running with those fears. You want to be able to help them contain their anxieties. And if you don't insert the idea that this was something highly unexpected, accidental, and unusual, so a child's anxieties can run rampant. So you do want to insert in those nuanced and qualified terms what happened. It's not important and usually not at all helpful to go into what I will call morbid detail. You can answer factual questions. Sometimes pre-adolescent children are going to want to know details and facts. You can say that you don't have all of those facts, but when they emerge or as you gain access to those facts, that you will let your child know. But let's avoid the morbidity and the lurid descriptions. It can be referred to as a drowning. It can be referred to as a tragic accident. And if you don't know further details, which ride or what ride, don't make up details. If you want, you can name the specific location, if that makes a difference to your child. But the information that you give should be measured, should be limited, because the objective here is not to flood them with facts. The objective here is to get your own child to begin processing and talking about what their own reaction is. Now let's talk about the processing. What is the process involved in processing? When we refer to processing, what we're saying is that whenever a human being absorbs frightening information, whether visible, whether audible, whether by word of mouth, whether experiential, but whenever we absorb frightening events, or sickening events, or sad events, or shocking events, so immediately the intellect, our thoughts, and the heart, our feelings, and the body immediately react. They react keharifayin, which means it's beneath the radar most of the time when the body, the brain, the nervous system are having this sudden reaction, which, as I said, can be thoughts, can be feelings, and can be body sensations. It's not fully recognized because it's happening in a moment of tragic shock. And what happens is that those feelings or those thoughts or those body sensations, they sit there. They lurk beneath consciousness. And the longer they stay, the more they begin to mount in their effect. And sometimes we use the term post-traumatic distress. And what we're referring to generally is those accumulated reactions of thoughts, of feelings, and body sensations, which just sat there and grew and yet remained on the brink of awareness somewhere in the subconscious parts of the mind. And so that those reactions don't stay there, where they can begin to spread and escalate. We want to help people process them, which means to gradually find a way to acknowledge, to be aware of them, and to become aware of them by talking about them. So your task is to help this intervention process. Your task as parents, as loving, caring, supportive, warm parents, is to help that process of the processing, which means to gradually help the child become aware through talking about what they're going through now, how they're feeling it, what thoughts are zipping through the mind, what they're noticing about their body. For example, they may feel tension or they may feel nausea. They may feel weak, they may feel sleepy, they may feel agitated and hyper. We want the child to be able to identify what he or she is feeling, what those body sensations are. We want that child to be able to talk about their feelings. They may be scared. They may be deeply sad. They may be morose and withdrawing. There can be angry reactions. There can be confused feelings. There can be numbing, shocked feelings. And our task as parents is to facilitate, to bring about the processing of those emotions so that they don't just remain there embedded deep within the mind where they can mount and escalate and spread. And then we would see further down the road more intense reactions. Now, these reactions can also involve cognition, thoughts, the ideas that a child or even an adult will find themselves dwelling on. They may start obsessing over and over what it was like and what it must have been like or what they actually saw or the screams that they heard. They may obsess with recall, with memories. On the other hand, their thought reactions can involve that same numbness we spoke about. They don't know what to think. They can't put their thoughts together. They're feeling chaos and they're feeling disorganized, or they're thinking nothing at all. Their mind goes blank. They can't pay attention. They can't concentrate. They can't recall things. So there are any number of cognitive or thought-related processes your child might be having, and our job as parents is to give them a forum, a supportive, warm forum to get them to talk, to prompt them gently to talk. And as they talk, we don't make the error of saying to the child, no, 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 don't feel that way or don't think that way or you don't have to cry. Just the opposite. Whatever that child expresses, validate it and say, sure, you're sad. Of course you're crying. Or say, yes, you're feeling sickly right now. Whatever they say to you, you mirror it, you reflect it back in caring terms. But you don't try to alter or correct or change their perception because they need to have their perception. Their perception at that moment is their reality, and they need to hear from you validation that it's okay, it's customary, it's common to think or to feel or to have that sensation in exactly the way that they are. So let them process. You follow along. You reflect back. You give them reassurance that, of course, that's what they're going through right now, and that by continuing this discussion with you, they will begin to feel some of that horror lift. They'll begin to feel some of that heaviness dissipate. It's going to work as long as you don't put words into their mouth, you don't try to alter the flow of their discussion, you don't try to reframe too quickly what they're going through, but instead, whatever they think, feel, or sense, that's valid for them. That's their experiential reality right now. Now, that means if the child reaches for you and wants to be consoled, to be hugged, you give them that. You don't say, no need to cry, because if they're crying, they do need to cry. Don't talk them out of what they're feeling. But once the child has ventilated, verbalized, and externalized the different things in the thoughts, in the emotions, and in the body sensations, then you offer them some normalization. And the normalization is to recap and say, well, right now, because of what you saw or because of what you heard, you are feeling, and then you reflect back the feelings, the thoughts, the senses that they mentioned, and say, and these are very, very common ways that human beings who have a neshama and who have a thinking mind and have a feeling heart, these are very normal reactions because of what happened, because of the seriousness of what happened. And you give them the green light, the open door, to talk with you at any point they want to, and you'll be supportive and you'll be receptive. But you will give, through that normalization message, you'll give the child the idea that as the days go by, they may feel different. They may find that some of those thoughts begin to relax, some of their fears begin to lessen. So you do plant that idea, that reassuring, encouraging idea, that the reactions are going to shift and hopefully decrease and diminish in the next couple of days. It's not uncommon for children to get more fearful at bedtime. And if that happens, sit with them. Sit with them when they go to bed. Sit with them while they say Shema. Let them have the nightlight on if they want to. But what we don't want is for bedtime to become a very heavy experience. We want them to know that it's okay to sleep and that they'll wake up with Hashem's help. Another thing is that we want to make sure that our children maintain their routine, that they follow their normal schedule, that they have structure throughout their day and throughout their night, which means if they normally get up at 7 o'clock, you prod them and push them gently to get up at 7. If they normally go to bed at 10, get them to bed at 10. We don't want them skipping meals. We don't want them skipping davening. We don't want them skipping normal activities, particularly if they're in camp. And we will hope that the camp directors and staff will also turn to Project High of High Lifeline for guidance as needed. A number of the camps are already doing that as we talk. But we want the child to get back adaptively into their routine, their schedule, and their structure. It is normal with younger children to feel avoidant. They don't want to have fun initially, or they don't want to go near the water, or they don't want water activities. It's normal initially for the child to be wary about being in such an environment. Let the camp handle it if the child is in a camp, if the child is at home. I would say that you can give them up to a day or so where they may want to refrain from those activities. But you talk with them that right now it's okay to be a little uneasy going into the water, but that they're going to find that as the days pass, they'll be able to feel a little more easy and they'll be able to do the things that they customarily do. Another thing we have to mention to kids is not to participate in rumor and gossip. They're going to hear many, many versions. They're going to hear many, many misinformed and misguided renditions of what happened. And we want to encourage our children that if they hear something that they don't know is fact or they don't know is true, they should let you know or let a responsible adult know rather than share it with their friends. But absolutely no participation in gossip and in rumoring, and it's not helpful. And it's usually very, very misdirected. So they should run by you or a responsible adult anything that they don't know to be true or that they hear. I'll say one more thing, and that is that your child has a mind, has a heart, has a body, and also has a neshama. And our Yiddish kinder are like ourselves, that we are prompted internally with what I'm going to call existential questions, or call them theological questions. Why did this happen? Was it in Onesh? Was this because of being in the 3 weeks they're going to wonder, why did this happen? And the questions that begin with the word why, we generally don't try to answer because we ourselves don't know why. We don't tell a child that he or she shouldn't ask those questions, but you validate that, of course, it's normal to be confused and to worry why such a thing happened. If you can have an age-appropriate, spiritually packaged discussion with your child, it's okay to do that. And you can talk with them about tefillin. You can talk with them about tehillim. Sometimes children want to daven a lot or want to cobble many mitzvahs on themselves after a tragedy. And there are some children who feel like doing the opposite, just feel a little bit cold and not feeling that spiritual energy temporarily. We stick to routine. We stick to schedule. And we also encourage children not to be macabre, grandiose things on themselves, not to make excessive kabbalas. But if a child wants to say more tehillim or wants to daven a little bit longer or wants to macabre not to be involved in lashon hara or wants to be more focused on their learning, if that's what they want to do is some type of a tikkun or a kabbalah, as long as it's reasonable and not excessive and not overly demanding, it's okay for them to do that. But if they want to talk about the theology, let's call it the hashkafa, the ruchnius issues, if you can have that discussion with them and they're comfortable and that's how your family works, you talk about this dimension, so do it. And if you don't feel that you're the person who can do that, but there's a Rebbe or a Rav or a Rebbetzin or a Menahel or someone that they trust and who they can have these conversations with, facilitate that for them. Say, you know, Rav so-and-so, he probably can talk this through with you. But let the child know that this is okay, not only to think, to feel, to sense, but to have a ruchnius reaction. That is also one way that we find ourselves trying to adjust in the aftermath of tragedy. I'm going to be signing off, but I want any of you who have concerns or who have questions to know that you can call our crisis line. It's 1-855 the number 3, and the word crisis, C-R-I-S-I-S, 1-855-3-CRISIS. My name is David Fox from Project Chai of Chai Lifeline, and if anything comes up that you would like to discuss or pursue or process, please do not hesitate to call. We should have better tidings, Besoros Tovos, Yeshuos, and Nechamos. Good night.